Well, welcome back from the break. I hope that was a delightful time for you with tea and cookies. I was
Yes.
hoping somebody would bring me a cookie, but it didn't happen. I was sitting here thinking, what kind do I want? I think oatmeal, and it didn't happen. Oh, no. No, you eat it.
Come on. We just broke it. We didn't bite into it.
Guess what?
Oh my goodness. That's what I get for saying something. I try to be an honest person. That's foremost. It's always the best way. Well, thank you. I will enjoy these cookies one at a time, not all at once. So, my talk is called Journey of the Heart. And this is a topic that's been on my mind for a while. And usually, since I've given so many Dharma talks over the years, I usually kind of revise them or add something to a previous Dharma talk. But for tonight, I just wrote this from scratch because it was on my heart. I started with a list of keywords, like 4 pages of keywords. I didn't use them all. And so anyway, I hope there'll be more life for this talk. So to start with, I'd like to quote Abraham Lincoln. And he said, "Most people are as happy as they decide to be." I don't know if you've heard that one before. Yeah. Well, that's true. It's a choice we make for ourselves and how we'll relate to the world. You know, if we're going to be happy, have a joyous existence, or, you know, are we just going to work hard and not think about being happy? And also, we get distracted by work and duty and not experience the joy as we should. And I am guilty of this. I can focus on work and focus on all the things I have to take care of, and out goes the window the happiness experience. It's not there. And often, time to time, people will ask me, "Marlene, what do you do for fun?" And then I have to think for a minute. I don't do anything for fun. And that was a real wake-up call. And someone did ask me that last week, and I thought, okay. My birthday's coming up. I'm going to get ready. I'm turning 60 on Thursday. So last week I started having fun. Yay. So I'm going to try to keep this going. I'm going to work on it. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So, as spiritual people, where do we seek and find happiness? You know, we are all spiritual people here in this room, and love in one's heart offers the capacity to love ourselves and to love the world. Because we all have the capacity to love, and all kinds of love. There's so many different kinds of love, including romantic love. All of them are very important, and all of us have a yearning to experience love with children, with parents, with friends, with lovers. I mean, there's all so many different kinds of ways to express the love that we have in our heart. When we embrace and take refuge in the three jewels, as many of you know, the Buddha, the Dharma, which are the teachings of the Buddha, and the Sangha, which is the community, it's a beginning. It's a great start because the Buddha's teachings really affect our hearts. It brings us love in our hearts. And the Sangha, the community, allows us to share that experience together. Most of you, I guess, went to dinner tonight in the dining hall. And that's a shared time of community, of Sangha, where you can express joy and happiness and a little bit of love, hopefully, with those that were there. And we're equipped with the tools we need to live courageously and with an authentic and well-lived life. We have those skills. We have those skills. So the journey of the heart offers a radiant love and a beautiful reflection to those around us. You can see it. You know, every once in a while, someone will say, I want what she has. And, you know, that's quite a compliment because we carry it with us. We carry it in our minds. We carry it in our hearts, in our very being. This is a life worth living, coming from a calm self-love. Rumi said, I look in your eyes and see the universe not yet born. And this is an interesting point of view. I'm sure you've heard that before. But to see that kind of openness in the eyes of another person, looking for the universe and the depth of the universe on the verge of becoming, is a wonderful experience. And to be that person is also wonderful. The idea of this poetic notion is what others see in us as we live a meditative life, a life of self-knowing. It offers us care and compassion and are both motivated by the pure heart. We must care and we must breathe thoroughly the essence of who and where we really are in a place of liberation. And we walk with that. I used to think that when you meditate, you're like tonight, you're sitting on a cushion or a chair. You decide to do it for 30 minutes to 40 minutes. And then you get up and you go on with your life. That's what I used to do. And then one day I realized I can't leave it on the cushion. I have to carry it with me wherever I go. So even if I'm at home, I need to carry that experience of meditation from one room to the other, to my conversations on the phone, to enjoying a cup of tea. A cup of tea can be a meditation. So even while I'm driving, I don't close my eyes, of course, but even while I'm driving, I teach at Dominican University, even while I'm teaching, especially when I'm prepping to teach a class, I focus on that kind of breath that brings the openness and the emptiness to my experience. So I really have something to share. There's a wide openness that I can draw from to share with my students. So meditation opens a wide space for emptiness. It gives us a wholeheartedness and the capacity to love deeply. We can show our true nature, our Buddha nature, our true beauty as a result of this kind of experience of focusing on meditation. Now, it is important to have a time of meditation in the morning or whenever time it fits into your schedule. But it's the carrying it throughout the day, having it as a complete experience in our lives that really is infectious to other people. I remember the first time I came to Spirit Rock. I can't remember how long ago that was, but it was, I mean, the dining hall wasn't even built. And a friend of mine and I were having, I'll never forget, beef barley soup at a clean, well-lighted place for books, which is no longer in Larkspur Landing. And we used to go there a lot. And I told her that I wanted to change my spiritual experience. And she seemed so together all the time to me. I figured she had the answer. And she said, well, I go to Spirit Rock. Why don't you come with me? And we came on a Monday night, and I kept coming back. But one Monday, I thought, I can't take this. There's no brown people. And so I was sitting against the wall. That's what I did every Monday night, so I wouldn't have to take on all the energy in the room. Sit against the wall over here. And when I got up to leave, Jack Kornfield came down here and he said, give it a try. Don't give up. And I was just about to hit the door for the last time. So I'm still here. Still here as I digress. So back to our true beauty and our true nature. Thich Nhat Hanh said, to be beautiful means to be yourself. You don't need to be accepted by others. You need to accept yourself. And we all know that. It's not new. And even when we have ups and downs, which we do, that's normal. We don't have to change who we are. It's a life journey, a passage with an open heart. When we feel that we have a broken heart, meditation and the love and compassion is what the medication is requiring. That's the medication to deal with a broken heart. How many of you have ever had a broken heart? Well, that pretty much covers the room. So it gets back to deeply practicing love in the heart and love in the world to heal our troubles. Another quote, we shape clay into a pot, but it's the emptiness inside that holds whatever we want. And that's from the Tao. So I like that analogy because the potter makes the pot and the pot is empty. Very empty, nothing in it but clay. And those are the kind of vessels we are, or should be. We should be that pot with that kind of openness, and we'll have whatever we need. Because the only thing that needs to dwell in that pot is love and compassion and forgiveness. That's what we need in that pot. When our meditation comes from the heart, we allow ourselves permission to trust it and experience peace and joy. We are saved from wild notions and intensive suffering. There's a bug on my paper. Be blessed. Intensive suffering, and in letting go, we can experience sweetness pouring out of the heart with a love practice. So, another quote again, feel the wounded heart that's underneath the addiction, self-loathing, or anger. Feel the wounded heart that's underneath the addiction, self-loathing, or anger. And that's Pema Chodron. I think. I'm pretty sure. It sounds like her. Okay. So it's so easy to feel bad about our lives. I mean, we've all been there, I think. I'm sure. I hope I'm not the only one. But there are those moments when we find ourselves embracing disappointment, or embracing suffering, or embracing feeling alone and lonely, feeling like no one loves us. There are those moments. There are those moments. And I have had that experience. So what I've done over the last few months especially, well, first of all, I have a great therapist. That always helps. But the other thing I've done over the last months is really depended on my friends. you know, calling friends, even if it's a short conversation, just to remind myself that I'm loved by others. I'm having a big birthday party on Sunday, and I really thought nobody would come. I got so anxious that I couldn't stand it. And my daughter said, if you're going to be that anxious, let's call it off. And, you know, there was some wisdom in that. I mean, if I'm going to make myself sick, and this was a couple of weeks ago, be sick for all this time. So there is the feeling of not feeling happy with ourselves and finding fault with ourselves. And this is a distortion. This isn't reality. This is what blocks the heart. You know, we're talking about the heart, the journey of the heart. This distortion blocks the heart, which blocks the love, which blocks compassion. We can't have those experiences, and that's what we were taught. We were taught by the Buddha that these things are possible, that there's an end to suffering. There's a beginning of suffering, and there's an end to suffering. And we have to remember that. So what's the choice? The choice is we live a life serving great gratitude. And I can easily find faults with all kinds of things. You know, I don't make enough money. I need a tune-up on my car. You know, all kinds of things that add to the list of all what's wrong, what needs to be fixed. And so a couple of days ago, I said, what happened to the gratitude? You have a car and you can afford to buy some food and what you need. The gratitude is critical. And then sharing that with other people, what you're grateful for, and allowing them to share their gratitude with you of what brings joy to their hearts. So, gratitude for our blessings. It's a time to appreciate the wisdom of the heart. The naturally good heart allows us true love, and it applies to ourselves as well as to others, to have that true love. So, when we develop positive beliefs and ideas about ourselves on a daily basis, it shows spiritual growth. This is not, you know, an end. This is a practice. Practice is ongoing, and it gets better and better. You know, when you think you've gotten to a point where it's pretty good, believe me, it can even get better than that. And I've had this experience. I've practiced and thought, okay, I got that licked. And then something else comes along and, oh no, wait a minute, I have to work on that one. But if we hang on to our practice, not clinging, of course, but hang on to the notion of our practice, we can really feel peace, really feel peace. Another thing that we can do with this journey that we're on, we can thank our spiritual teachers for their love and wisdom. And that's something we don't think about doing. And, you know, teachers of the Dharma work really hard. And oftentimes they're not making much money, but they're working on what they believe and sharing their hearts. And, you know, we get that little light going on sometimes when someone is teaching, just that pearl comes and makes us more aware. And it's great to be able to thank the person that shared that with you. I remember when I came on Monday nights, I used to thank Jack for things that he shared that I wrote down, and other teachers that I've been grateful for on a retreat when I have my alone time with a teacher, you know, expressing my gratitude and thankfulness for what they've taught and what they've shared, and, you know, just glowing in my little room up there. taking it in and really believing that this is part of the path, this is where I'm headed, this is where I'm going. So it's the teachings that offer us liberation that we constantly seek. That's liberation. Mindfulness practice keeps us in the present moment where we are awake to every feeling. Now think about that. A lot of times we stuff the feelings and we don't think about what it is, but we feel it. We can feel it. But because we're not being mindful sometimes, especially if we're in a hurry, driving, working really hard and want to get off from work, or you know, caregiver for an aging parent. My mother turned 92 yesterday, and I can see just in the last couple of weeks, she is slipping. It's amazing. And now talking to her on the phone, even today, she couldn't hear me. And I had to keep repeating things over and over and trying to enunciate so she can hear me. Sometimes she got it, and then other times she said, you don't have to repeat it, I just can't hear you. I remember several years ago, I don't know how many years, but several years ago we went to a movie. We used to go to the movies together, and we sat through this movie. I'm not sure which one it was, but it was light and had some humor in it. And I was laughing through the movie, and my mother wasn't. And at the end of the movie, she turned to me and she said, I didn't hear a single thing they said. Aww. Yeah. And she used to be so vibrant and so together. So this is my experience right now. So even with that, even as a caregiver, even as someone that sees a parent or a relative, another relative, uncle, aunt, decreasing in that manner, it's very painful. And yet, we can be grateful for their existence, that you've had them this long, that you've loved them this long, and they have loved you. They have been, in my case, she has been my best teacher. So, as a result of all of this feeling and experience, we may detect spiritual components of depression and self-hatred. That happens. Doesn't mean you're not a spiritual person, but if you're mindful, if you're very mindful, you'll detect some of these feelings coming up, these components of depression. And we may struggle with perfectionism. I know that's a problem for me, and maybe some of you have the same problem, where we cling and grasp to wanting to be better at what we do. And when we realize this, it becomes a part of self-knowingness, and we develop resilience. So perfectionism is, you know, in itself, it's a wonderful goal. Everything's right. You do everything right. You try to make things better. But that kind of focus causes suffering, brings on suffering. So the best thing to do is to be able to settle with what you have and be grateful again for that. And letting go of the perfectionism. And like I said, as a result of this knowingness, you develop resiliency. And that's a great gift, to have that kind of strength in your spirit. It's wonderful. Some of us think that love is either black or white, either or. And, or all or nothing, actually, all or nothing. And when I first started my relationship with my partner, Ricardo, 14 years ago, I was a nut. I wanted him by my side every moment, if not in my arms, all the time. And if he wasn't, I suffered greatly. Where is he? Oh, yes. It's amazing he's still around. So this caused great suffering in my life. And I figured out I've got to do something or else I'm going to lose him. This isn't working. So I depended on my practice to free myself from the suffering I had. And it was all or nothing. So in my practice, I had to learn not to cling. And we all need love. There's no doubt about that. We all enjoy being in love and having someone in our lives to love and love back, receive love and give love. It's a true pleasure. And it also elevates our self-esteem, makes us feel better about ourselves, that someone finds that kind of value in us. But I had to really focus with my hands empty, empty hands, and focus on what it meant to let him go. Now, that's a weird notion because I didn't want to let him go. I wanted to hug him. But I had to open my hands and say, what does it mean to let him go? Let him go. And as a result, we had more fun. Our relationship was more interesting. He is very generous. If he were here, he wouldn't believe this. He's a very kind person. So I had to learn that. And it took me a while, but I had to learn that. And I learned that also with my daughter as she got older and left home. I had to figure out how to love her and accept her love without squeezing her. And like my mother did me, actually, I didn't want to be my mother. I didn't want to repeat what my mother did to my daughter. I wanted her to be free. So I've learned this in different relationships, and it's valuable. So even though we have the basic need for love, we can really learn to love back without that element of clinging. So another quote, treat yourself sympathetically with loving kindness. If you are gentle with yourself, you will become gentle with others. And that's Lama Yeshe, very sweet teacher he was. So there are some that believe that baptism is a spiritual awakening of love. Virtues of truthfulness include consideration, sincerity, humility, love, and humorous engagement. We can't forget the humor. That's all a part of the experience. So we must see and listen with our eyes, ears, and heart. We need to remember to always practice metta, loving kindness, or the universal friendliness. And when you think of it in that way, it really brings the world home to you. If you practice metta for others and imagine it as the whole universe of sentient beings, and then you get that back. You know, I believe that when you give, you get back. Even though that person is not there in the room with you, it's something that is a pleasure. Now, I have one exception. Well, I shouldn't have an exception to metta. Let me clean that up. I gave metta to George Bush. That was really hard. But it healed my suffering, you know, because I was suffering before. Why am I thinking about George Bush and suffering? That's ridiculous. So by saying metta phrases for him, as I've done for others, it healed me. You know, it healed me of my disappointments and all my suffering. So, you know, it works. So we must see and listen. We need to remember always to practice metta. 6 months ago, I became a grandmother. I'm so excited. He's so adorable. I guess as they all are. But this one's special. He's mine. My daughter and her husband are amazing, especially my daughter. I love my son-in-law too, but my daughter really is amazing. But little Solomon takes my breath away. There is love and wisdom in his heart, his very being. And I could just see it. I can see how he's growing and what he'll become. And of course, my daughter and son-in-law are great parents. But it's amazing to watch this happen. When she was in labor, I was in the labor room with her. And it was quiet, you know, we had a lot of space to ourselves. And her husband was playing classical music for her, and she kept changing the instruments and the symphonies, and, you know, while she's in labor. But when Solomon entered the world, it was like magic love. Magic love. Even though it was a powerful moment, we surrounded him with quiet voices and warm encouragement. And that was our welcome to the world. He was adorable and still is, of course, but he's changed a lot. He's growing and learning. 6 months old, how much can he do? But he's talking something, not sure what it is. But anyway, this is my most recent experience that's brought me joy and happiness. There is no reason not to be happy with this kind of experience. There is no reason to not feel like I'm having fun when I'm in his presence or even just thinking about him. And to watch my daughter be a marvelous mother, it's such a, you know, I mean, I never imagined she would be a great mother, and here she is. I don't know where she learned that from. Anyway, how many of you have had a similar experience with your own children or your grandchildren? Yes, people have raised their hands. Yes. There's nothing like it. And it's something that you'll never forget. So, another quote. See the stars, the moon, and the sun. How they move in silence. We need silence to be able to touch souls. Mother Teresa. Well, that's how I feel when I touch Solomon. And now my mother, of course. So I call this the practice of sacred, noble silence. That's what I practice. That's what I try to engage with all the time. You know, no television on, no, not even the radio. Just sacred, noble silence. I do listen to Dharma music on the internet. They're mostly chants, but I do enjoy that. But there's still a silence about that experience that runs deep with me. So all of this that I've been talking about is actually an intimate relationship with ourselves and with the world around us. It's a natural love that we engage with compassion and wisdom. And with this kind of love, we don't need to apologize for our emotions. They're natural and they're a part of who we are. This is a divine love that allows emotional freedom. that I've been talking about. There is no shame in this journey of the heart. No shame. A few days ago, the Dalai Lama expressed his wish from Washington, D.C. Many of you have probably seen this. I pray for a more friendly, more caring, and more understanding human family on this planet. To all who dislike suffering, who cherish lasting happiness, this is my heartfelt wish. And I admire him so much. He's a great teacher. He's wonderful. So I really hang on to his every word. Oh, I don't hang on. I'm caught. Anyway, we must not ask ourselves, how do I love myself, others, and the planet? We now must ask ourselves, I don't know what happened there. How do I love myself, others, and the planet? How do I celebrate life and love of the arrival of each new being in the world? So it's simply magic of being in each new moment that heals and nourishes our thankful hearts. It's that bit of magic that I saw and experienced when Solomon was born, just to see him come into the world, just to see my daughter give him up to the world, to meet a new friend. It's magic. So let's take a few moments to meditate, focusing on the heart, inhaling and exhaling through the heart. Feel the self-love with compassion. So now let's do that. And put your hand on your heart when you do this. And breathing in with compassion and exhaling with love. Breathing in with compassion and exhaling with love. And now for the person sitting next to you, breathing in with compassion, exhaling with love. And maybe on the other side, the person sitting next to you, breathing in with compassion, exhaling with love. And for the planet, for everyone on this planet, breathing in and feel it in your heart, breathing in with compassion and exhaling that love all over the world. Breathing in with compassion for yourself and exhaling the love all over the world. So with that, let's ask ourselves, may I love myself completely just as I am? May I love myself completely, just as I am. And remember that question, carry it with you. Because sometimes, as I've said many times already, we're not happy with the person that we are. We want more, we want it to be better. And that's the moment where you stop and ask that question, may I love myself completely, just as I am, just as I am, no different, not taller, not shorter, not thinner, just as I am. So with that, I have a little time. So what we're going to do now is pass the mic around, And I would like to hear your stories as it relates to loving yourself just as you are, loving others, breathing in compassion, breathing out love, or a story that you would like to share like I did with about my grandson. Something that has heightened your capacity to love, some experience that brought about some huge notion of love, romantic or otherwise. And we have a mic. We have one in the back.
The first brave soul. I want to share about my relationship with my mother. My mother was not an easy person to be around. I spent a lot of time being very angry at how smothering she was to me and my brother and sister, especially my sister and I. And I have twins that are turning 8 next month. And I work with a life coach who said to me about 3 years ago, until you forgive your mother and grow compassion for her and understand that above and beyond even your understanding of what made her so possessive and so difficult, until you grow that compassion, you will continue to have difficulties with yourself about being a mother. I had no idea what she was talking about 3 years ago, but I was willing. My project of raising my children is a very important project to me. And many nights I had gone to sleep feeling I'm just like my mother and being very angry at myself, that not seriously, but thinking to myself, maybe I should give them up for adoption. I'm ruining them like my mother ruined me. Yeah. So about 3 years ago, about 2.5 years ago, something kicked in my meditation, in my spiritual world. It was an overnight process that I felt compassion for my mother and a deep, deep love. All the abuse and difficulty in my childhood had left. It flattened, went away, and I felt love. About 6 months ago, 7 months ago actually, I had a feeling, an intuitive feeling that my mother was not well. I called her attendant, my mother, 90 years old. Her attendant said, your mother's not well, and she couldn't describe to me why. So I got on a plane, had my children taken care of. I got on a plane to see what was happening with my mother. I just had a feeling, and she was on the floor, and she was in pain, and she was on the floor, and my brother had told the attendant, leave her on the floor. I'll be there in 2 or 3 hours. I'm busy. And somewhere in my heart, I knew to get on that plane and go see. I called 911. She was missing 2 units of blood, and she had such a bad infection that it was moving into her kidneys, etc. So she went to the hospital, and from the hospital 3 weeks later, I put her in a facility where she could be watched. I flew back and forth for the next several months to see her, knowing that my children would be taken care of by the people who I've surrounded them with. 7 weeks ago tonight, I had a feeling. I flew in. My mother was very, very ill, and she was in the hospital at this point. I held her in my arms as she passed in my arms. And I just can't tell you how grateful I am that I changed my anger over this woman and embraced the compassion that I can stand here feeling a foundation of joy in my life and a freedom to love and be able to release her, knowing that I grew compassion and she did not die, that I didn't have to feel that anger in myself. She always knew love, but that I was able to express for the last 2.5 years the compassion that I had for her. I didn't agree with her. I understood her and grew compassion. And I'm free and joyful and miss her greatly.
And you've ended your own suffering.
I ended my suffering about all that was that she couldn't do and what I wanted and she wasn't what I wanted. Da, da, da. And I'm free to love my children. And yeah. I'm free to look at my mother in a picture and look at her and see love that I right. could not get to because I was so angry.
Right.
I'm free.
Very good. Yeah, thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Yes, over here. There we go. Somehow.
Thank you. Last week I came out to Spirit Rock and had dinner before the talks. And after dinner I went back and I had parked in the first of a tandem spot so no one else could park there. And I thought, that's selfish. So I pulled in all the way, realizing somebody might block me in. And after the sit, I went back outside, and somebody had blocked me in. So I sat down and waited and waited and waited, and they didn't show up for 15 minutes. And I found myself getting more and more antsy, and I'd sort of settle down, oh, I'll just meditate. And I wanted to get home so I could see the new episode of Weeds. Which is one of my favorite shows.
I've never seen that.
And after 15 minutes, the person came.
It was me.
Ah.
Oh!
And she explained that her daughter had to go to the bathroom. And I snarled at her that I was blocked in. And she explained again, and I said, well, I was feeling very frustrated. And that's where we left it, and we all went home.
It's all good.
I made it home in time for Weeds. And your daughter
very
got
good.
To go to the bathroom. And I was just amazed at how after, you know, sitting here and the nice Dharma talk and all my 23 years of meditation practice, that this is such a strong program. I just felt it's not even my business. This is just so strong and happening. And I realized, you know, I'm 67 years old. And however compassionate I be in my life, however of service, however joyful and at peace I am in my life, I might from time to time have this happen. And, you know, I'd love to be like, a saint. Oh, your daughter's fine. Sometimes that's just not going to happen. And for me, that's the self-acceptance. And that's what helps me accept other people are the exact same way. We're all the same person who have these programs that, you know, I was mad at my mother when I was 4 years old because she didn't show up one afternoon after school. I can remember the seeds of this. And even knowing that doesn't diffuse it totally. And thank you for showing up again in my life.
There was someone who blocked me in about 6 months ago, and he's here too. And I'm looking, where is he? He's a tall English man, wherever he is. And he blocked me in, and I did not do as well as you did. I was really, really pissed off about him doing it. He blocked me in because I was, there was the one in the front, the one in the middle, and he parked behind me, and I have had a big car, he parked behind me, and I was like in his, you know, like kind of being New York and really in his face. And he didn't handle it very well. And I drove home thinking bad thoughts about him, really realizing I had just sat here meditating and I could have ripped him a new one. It's like, it's crazy. You know, it's one thing to know God, and it's another thing to live each moment, even the hard moments, and hold that place. So,
we all get it.
Very good. Someone else? Oh, over here and over here. Okay.
It's kind of interesting because I was thinking about, I just have something really simple to say, but it has so much to do with what they were talking about, which was that I was recently reflecting on people's foibles and how when I let go of my own judgment about my own foibles, it's so much easier to love other people. And they're, you know, because we all have them. And that's a big release of, I don't know, inner talk and things that it's kind of irrelevant in a way. It's like, why would I be having an opinion about what someone else is apparently doing that's, you know, whatever. So it's interesting. This is the subject matter tonight. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, good. Thanks. And then here in the turquoise sweater.
Hi, am I too close to it? Can you hear me?
No, you're fine.
I just love it, the way the world and the moment just gives us what we need to hear and what we are in that moment. Sometimes when we don't want it, sometimes when we do. I really do this time. Your whole Dharma talk and our conversation has reminded me so much of when I was 27, my mother died from smoking cigarettes from lung cancer. And by that time, I grew up outside of Washington, D.C., and I had moved to San Francisco, had a fancy job being congressional liaison for what became the Federal Energy Administration, so I could fly back and forth. And I remember, I really thought, you know, that I was hot stuff, you know, 27 years old, could keep going back and forth. And there she was dying. And it was because of cigarettes. And I couldn't get that. And then somehow, very subtly woven into that was that there must have been a way that it was my fault, that I should have been able to do something else, get her to stop or something like that. And when she died, fortunately, I was there. I mean, it was on one of those trips that I got there in time, and she opened her eyes the way she had, you know, as a brilliant young Ivy League woman, and looked at me and said, "I love you." And I said, "I love you." And we smiled, and she died. And in that moment, I decided that if and when I had a child, you know, I would wait until I really knew more about this and had done what I thought I needed to do in the world, spiritually, physically, etc. So I was 38 when I had my daughter, who is now 25. And in the last couple of years, I've had some difficult but just part of life experiences, a spine surgery that was 16 hours long that required, apparently, through Kaiser, that I take horrendous amounts of anesthesia that I was allergic to. I'm pretty small. And so I was pretty much asleep for 4 months and didn't know who I was. I mean, I had these different identities. I would wake up and, you know, be who knows who I was. I fortunately, or maybe unfortunately, didn't keep a journal at that time. But my poor daughter driving every day from Fairfax, San Anselmo, to Kaiser Oakland, only to see this mother that, you know, my goal in life had been to be the best mother, best friend, and I did, and she thought I'd done a pretty good job. So we were very, very close. And a couple of times she's told me after that, I thought that she was her father, my husband, who had died 6 weeks before the surgery. And I didn't even know that. So when I got through all of this, I had to deal with that and go through the mourning. And now she's a very intense and very wonderful person. I get to really notice how difficult all of it was for her. And so when she's impatient with me, or when I repeat something, now I'm like the little kid wanting to please, you know, be that brilliant mother I once was, and not the little kid who doesn't remember. And so I repeat, and I see her getting annoyed. And I'm so grateful for my practice and my teachers and what's happened tonight. Because not as fast as I would like to, but relatively quickly, I get it, you know, and I can bow to that. And I can see that self-hatred, sort of that slime, you know, oozing down into my heart. And I can say, thanks for sharing. Go away. Not true. We'll make it. I understand so clearly how she feels, having had not the same situation, but a very similar one. And to come here tonight and have this opportunity to tell you all this and to hear you and to hear the talk has just been such a gift, such a Thank sunset you. In the middle of a thunderstorm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Thanks. Anyone else? We have a few minutes. Okay, over here. You're getting your exercise.
Hello. I'm just totally so confused and mixed about everything. I don't know. I just don't know where to start. But I just gotta get stuff out of my system, and so I'm sorry if I don't make any sense or if my whatever I have to share is sounds small or anything like that. My name is Caesar. I am from Brazil. I am 32 right now. And I'm on this huge backpacking trip. It's 1 month since I've been out of my house and my country. And I'm on this turning point in my life in which everything is up in the air. I quit, left a successful 14 years career in writing, in because it just stopped making sense. I left 10 years of marriage because it just stopped making sense. And I've been waking every morning and looking out the window and trying to make sense of out of anything. And I'm just not being able. And I don't know. And it stops right there because it seems like I have all these fragmented words and thoughts and images of people that I miss and people that I don't know and people I've been meeting. So I have, for example, I've been in San Francisco for like 2 weeks and I met nice people and I'm going to have to leave them in 2 weeks. And every place I go, I stay like 1 week and I meet and I leave and, I don't know if I should even be bothering about it because there's nothing fitting around. So I don't know. I just needed to say it because every day I wake up and I just find no one to share it, and I'm just going crazy. I mean, that's it.
Well, I hope things work out for you.
They will. I know they will. It's just like I felt comfortable to say it here because I felt good here with everything you said, and I felt good with the people. And thank you.
Many blessings. So I bow to all of you with your experiences, your families, and your thoughts. May your practice be well and blessed. Thank you for coming.
Hi. If you could help put back some of the chairs, that'd be great. And looks like you all have an opportunity to practice patience out there in the parking lot, so have a good time. And drive, remember, turn right and go through Woodacre. It's a nice little town. It's a nice redwoods on the way. So same time, same channel.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.com. www.lifeinthepresent.org/donate.